Charles Ponzi, the man whose name became synonymous with swindle, always knew he would become famous. When he came to America from Italy in 1903, he was 21 years old. He had squandered a small inheritance that was meant to pay his way through the University of Rome, and he took pride in never having worked a day in his life. Still, Charles Ponzi was sure he'd amount to something. That's part of the picture we get in a new biography, Ponzi's Scheme, by journalist and now journalism professor Mitchell Zuckoff. Zuckoff joins us from member station WBUR in Boston, and welcome.
Thank you, Sheila.
So first of all, what was Ponzi's scheme?
Ponzi's scheme was a get-rich-quick scheme. It was a promise that people would, for any amount of money they invested, receive 50% interest in just 45 days. Seems impossible, but for a brief time in 1920, Charles Ponzi pulled it off.
And how did he think he could do this?
Well, he came up with an idea. He had been writing to people in Europe trying to work out some business plans, and one sent him back a little thing called a postal reply coupon. It was basically a penny stamp, and he thought he could use different currency exchanges to turn those into millions of dollars in profits.
Was it legal?
It was legal. You could buy them in Italy, where the currency was depressed, and sell them in Boston, or use them in Boston, where the value would be much greater.
And so is that what he did?
That's what he said he would do. But in fact, he was never able to pull it off. It was impractical. It was logistically impossible. But by the time he figured that out, he had already begun taking investments from people who thought, hey, 50% in 45 days, let me take a try.
So what did he do, if not what he said he would do?
He ended up relying on the oldest fraud in the book. It's called robbing Peter to pay Paul. You pay your early investors with money from later investors, and it's a house of cards that can't continue forever.
Let's go back a bit. When Ponzi hatched the postal exchange scheme in 1919, he felt it used all the experience he had had up to that point, some of which was pretty seedy. Well, catch us up on what he'd been doing in America.
Sure. In the 16 years prior to that, he had had all kinds of wonderful adventures and some awful misadventures. The wonderful part, or the heroic side of Ponzi that people don't know about, was he gave skin off his own back to save a woman who had been burned horribly in a mining accident. He befriended people up and down the East Coast, but he also got into some trouble. He was working in a bank in Montreal, and on his way out, Ponzi passed a bad check and ended up spending a couple of years in prison for it. And then after that, on his way back to the United States, he brought in some Italian immigrants with him and was caught smuggling illegal immigrants. So he spent some time in prison, but while he was doing that, he was always trying to find a way to be rich.
And what really prompted him to do it?
He was motivated as much as anything by love. He had fallen in love with a beautiful young woman named Rose Gnecco, and Rose, all she wanted was Ponzi home for dinner. She adored him, and she was happy just to spend time with him, but he was so convinced that what he wanted for her was a huge house and furs and diamonds and a big car driven by a chauffeur that he wanted to get rich at all costs.
What was his technique for attracting investors?
Well, first, you have to start with Ponzi himself. He was enormously charismatic. He was charming. He dressed beautifully. He had wonderful manners. And so people were drawn to him to begin with. And then he, very slowly, he started what he called a snowball downhill. He attracted a few investors and was ready to pay them their 50% interest. And so they would tell people, and they would tell friends, and they told friends. And soon the snowball became an avalanche.
And how did it unravel?
Well, there was a young newspaper editor named Richard Grozier who had been operating in the shadow of his father, who owned and edited the Boston Post newspaper, one of the best papers of its day. And Richard Grozier couldn't believe that this guy Ponzi could possibly offer these kinds of profits. And who could, when banks were offering a few percent a year, how could Ponzi offer 50% in 45 days? So Richard Grozier and the Boston Post sick their best reporters on Ponzi. Get to the bottom of this. And in the summer of 1920, there was a weeks-long battle of wills and nerve, and only one could survive. Either Ponzi was going to end up owning the Boston Post, or the Boston Post was going to put an end to Ponzi's business.
That seems clear in retrospect. Was it clear to Ponzi at that time?
Ponzi never had an exit scheme. Most schemers they're looking for the door the minute they start taking the money in. But Ponzi, one day, he had $1 million literally in a check in his pocket, and in his other pocket, he had 2 tickets to Italy for himself and his wife, Rose. He could have gotten out. He didn't see the end coming. He didn't see it happening this way. He was sure he, with a little more time, he could pay everyone off and live happily ever after.
Did he ever admit that what he had done in 1920 was a scam?
Only on his deathbed. A reporter tracked him down in this hospital, and there Ponzi admitted for the first time and the only time that he had, in fact, been robbing Peter to pay Paul. And really, from that moment on, it became known as a Ponzi scheme.
Mitchell Zuckoff's biography is Ponzi's Scheme, The True Story of a Financial Legend, published by Random House. He's with us from WBUR in Boston. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.